Hey everyone, welcome to the Modern Buddhism podcast. And today I'm in conversation with Len Foley. He's been studying, practicing meditation and Buddhism within the Kadampa Buddhist tradition since 2000. And also he teaches meditation and Kadampa Buddhism too. In this conversation, which is really interesting, really inspiring, we explore how to basically live in a very busy life and be able to really work with those situations to improve our good qualities such as love, kindness, compassion, acceptance, how to develop a deeper sense of inner resilience even in the midst of a very busy life. And Len is a really good example of this because he has an incredibly busy life. He's a business owner, a father, he's also an author, he's very, very busy life, and also he works and helps at a meditation center in California. So there's so many aspects of this conversation that I think will apply to so many of us in our lives these days. Hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Len, thanks a lot for dropping in on the podcast today. Really delighted to have you here and really looking forward to exploring this with you, this conversation today.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
So I thought why this conversation would be super helpful for people listening on the podcast today, because everyone has a busy life in one way or the other. Whether you have a busy work life and a busy home life, we all have busyness in our life. And right. I thought what we could look at today is how really you've dealt with that, and you know, and also really exploring how on a day-to-day basis you work with the challenges you face, because you're a successful business owner, you're a published author, you have a family and a daughter, you've got a very busy life, and also you teach meditation and Buddhism too. So when you mix all of that in, it's quite a lot of things to deal with. So I thought that that would be a really good basis to really help people understand how we can work with things in a healthier way. But also, like, let's explore a little bit, what is success and what does that really mean? Like, what is the success we experience and how we feel about that? But to start to get us there, I thought it'd be good to maybe understand a little bit about your background and what led you to practicing meditation and Buddhism over time.
Yeah, I've always been kind of a searcher in my life, and I always kind of had this weird sense that there was something not quite right about my life, but life in general, and that there was something profoundly missing from my life. And I think we all can agree that we go through our own kind of searches in weird ways. Sometimes we don't really know we're kind of searching to fill in that gap inside of us that's looming all the time. And sometimes we replace it or try to fill it with relationships, with money, with trying to appear important, maybe in school or in our job. And we just go through so many different tunnels of, when we look back, they almost seem like they're complete meaningless moments in our life where we spent so much time trying to make this particular project or this particular endeavor work out, and then it didn't work out, or it did, and then we look back and like, well, what was the point of that really? Like, why did I care about that so much? Because now, and I'm sure a lot of people have the experience of thinking, if they could meet their self when they were maybe in high school or grammar school, like I know from personal experience, even in college, like I have no idea what I would talk to that person about. I'd like to give that person some advice, but I know they would not listen to it, because I know there are other people at that time in my life giving me advice and I didn't listen to them. So why would I listen to myself? You know what I'm saying? So I think there's kind of like that sense, and I had that sense for most of my life, that I'm just not fulfilling the purpose of why I'm supposed to be here. And I think a big chunk of that was this desire to become financially stable and successful, and to just be blunt about it, to make money, and a lot of it. You know, my big dream was, if I could just have $100,000, all the problems I could have possibly imagined in my life would be completely solved. I had a bicycle, needed a car. Well, $100,000 would get me a car. I had notebooks, I needed a computer. Well, $100,000, I'd probably get a computer. I'm surfing on my friends' couches, you know, kind of going from place to place. Didn't really have a place that I was paying rent to live in. Well, $100,000 would solve those problems as well. And I had all these lists of things that I wanted. I had these books, what do they call those little vision quest books, that I would write all my goals and all the things I wanted. And the end result was $100,000 will solve all those problems. Now, it's funny, I spent the entire duration of my 20s trying to make that amount of money. Including starting an incredibly ridiculous hot air balloon business in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which was a complete utter disaster. I thought I was a genius at the time. My dad and I, he was a balloon pilot, and we wanted to start a balloon business in South Carolina. So we moved from Boston, just us two. He was still married. We still had the family, but we wanted to try this out because we thought we could actually make this work. And we thought we were geniuses because there was no competition. And the reason why was because it's literally the worst place in the United States to fly a balloon. And so we'd have to drive all the way inland and pray that the wind wasn't, you know, going directly towards the ocean, because if it did, we would literally just be swept out into the ocean. And we came very close many times. We had one instance where we actually took off in the balloon with four paying customers, four people who were paying good money to be in that hot air balloon, and immediately enveloped in complete fog. But I remember where I'm in the middle of this balloon flight with my dad, and I'm looking at my dad, he's looking at me, and he's utterly terrified. And I'm like, because he's the pilot of the balloon, now I'm terrified, and I'm like, what are we doing? Why? What is this? What's the point of this business? This is insane. So after so many like failed attempts at trying to make my life work, I eventually stumbled into a Buddhist retreat, and I heard things for the first time about life and about what really the meaning of life was. It doesn't mean you have to give up making money. It doesn't mean you have to give up your job or go to the Himalayas and try to find a guru. And in fact, modern Buddhism really is what they were teaching back then, where you have a regular life and you figure out a way to kind of weave your spiritual practice into your life. And that's kind of how it all got started.
What's great about that story, and you know this from your own life, it's like that drive is relentless. When it really grabs you and you think, right, I want to be really happy. I want to feel really successful in life. I want things to work out. That drive is so compelling that it will drive you into an early grave if you really let it. Unfortunately, for most people, that can just carry you through your whole life. And yet still, there's that hole in your heart. There's something missing. There's always something missing. We feel separate from the peace and the happiness we want. We feel separate from the peace of mind, the happiness, the contentment that we're driving ourselves to find. And we think, if I get all these things right, if I get this hot air balloon company right, if I get all that right, I'll finally have it. And what I love about what you're saying there is you were really searching for meaning.
Yes.
And that's the thing that most of us are struggling with these days. I feel like my life at some level feels meaningless. Even with yourself, when you were younger, it's that feeling like something's empty here. Something's missing here. Something feels meaningless, because meaning just simply isn't something somebody defines for you. Nobody can tell you your life is meaningful or meaningless. Meaning just is the experience you have in your heart when you feel you're accomplishing at a deeper level what you really want. Because otherwise, everything's meaningless if you're not actually accomplishing what you want. Like if I plant tomato seeds in, or tomato seeds, whichever way you want to put it. If I plant tomato seeds in the garden and I'm hoping to get sunflowers, if sunflowers eventually appear, I'm going to feel that was a complete meaningless waste of time, because what I actually wanted was tomatoes, but I mixed up the seed packet and put in sunflower seeds. And that's what we're getting. Like, it's often you see that with people who have a lot of wealth and a lot of success. And I, you know, similar to you, I've kind of worked in those areas, and I've worked around people who had a lot of wealth and a lot of success. And you can see just in the background of all of that experience, it's just, what's the meaning in all of this? Well, if you start to find what you really want, which is just to be happy, to be increasingly free from suffering, and maybe for our family and others to also experience that, it will always feel meaningful every day, as you know. And I guess that's what brought you, in a sense, that's why I was intrigued by your sense of, I was looking for meaning, because obviously you were working super hard, but you weren't finding what you really wanted.
I think that's a outstanding point, because I think a lot of people think, oh, when I enter the spiritual path, that fire is going to be extinguished, and then I'm not going to be doing anything interesting. My life's going to be boring. I can tell you from personal experience, I have more ambition and deep drive right now in my life, in my, you know, late 50s, than I've ever had in my life. And not only is it just about that drive, but it's the drive to do things that do make a difference. So in my 20s, I self-published and wrote, because I wanted to be an author in my 20s. And I wrote some of the literally worst books ever written. And they were so bad, I self-published these on my own because nobody else would really publish them. And I know this because I sent out books galleys all the time. And I have, I'm not joking, I have a collection of 1,000 rejection letters from publishers, over 1,000 from everybody that rejected all the books I wrote. And I was not deterred. I was going to keep continuing doing this. And if they didn't like them, I'm going to make them like them by publishing them myself. Some of the most embarrassing, horrific. Luckily, they were under another pen name, so you'll never find out what they were. And I'll never tell.
Give us the pen name.
Oh, my gosh. Just horrific. But there were just so many things I did with this drive, but not having the wisdom to know what were the right things for me to be doing. And so, yes, I'm a self-published author now. I've sold actually many copies of books, but I don't write these pedantic spiritual books, and they were awful pedantic spiritual books. Now I write children's books, and I realize, oh, it's not that I wasn't supposed to be a writer. I was writing the wrong kind of books. I write these little goofy, silly, rhymy, you know, books about frogs swimming in toilets now, and they're great, and they're fun. My daughter loves them. I did it when she was born. I started reading books to her and stuff. But I think it's important to realize that our fire will only get deeper when we're mixing it with meaning. And I think that's why having the spiritual practice and using all of the things that we're doing in our life for our own spiritual growth is so important, so crucial, actually.
And it's great that you bring that up, because I do think people in business and people who have busy lives really think, you know, I'm going to do that later, though. Because right now I'm at the peak of my career. I'm, you know, the peak of my business. My business is really thriving. Oh, I'll do that later. But that's why I'm working so hard. So I put enough money away in the bank. When I retire, that's when I'm going to sort my mind out. But of course, we can be doing this on a daily basis. And as you know very well yourself, and as part of your life now, it's like we can take the time and space in the morning to sit down and meditate, really get the mind into a very good space, clear all the clutter from the mind. And especially if you're a busy person in a busy career, you have a business to run. It's that, as you point to it, and that's what's really problem, you can, or really important, is you can throw people and money at all the problems out there all day long. But the thing is, gradually over time, if you're not giving yourself time and attention to really work with your heart, to work with your mind, you're going to feel those problems are exponential. Because we throw people and money at problems out there, but we don't solve what we call in modern Buddhism the inner problem, which is the increasing stress, increasing anxiety, increasing feelings of overwhelm, and the decreasing experience of peace of mind and happiness. So we're throwing people and money at problems out there, but it seems like the problems are getting worse, because your life is not separate from your mind. Your business experience of your business or your experience of your career is not separate from your mind experiencing that business and career. So if you can resolve that inner problem of feeling overwhelmed, anxious, stressed, or feeling you've never enough or you've never have enough, if you can begin to resolve that, you start to notice, I don't really have a problem with problems anymore. I've still got lots of problems out there, but for me, it's not a problem anymore. And you see, as you know, that's not easy. And I'd be interested to get your take on that. It's like, that's not easy to prioritize when you have all these other external problems, but it's absolutely necessary.
We had this really interesting experience during COVID. One of our businesses is a coffee shop. And when COVID started, basically all our employees left. And so we had a choice. We would shut down the shop or keep it running. And we decided we're going to shut down the shop. So my wife and I went in, we put the shades down, and we were ready to shut. And then people started coming in. I'm like, oh, all right, well, we'll give you a little cup of coffee, a little this for that. You know, we'll do a few little things. And then we realized, like, actually, people want to come in, and they want to be part of our community, and they want to actually talk to people and hang out. So we became the people who were working for us, which was Rebecca worked the cash register, and I became a barista, which is something I never wanted to do. I never, ever wanted to work as a barista and have to just work in a retail outlet. But I realized we're actually serving the community here. Like, people really wanted to come in and hang with us. And so we did that for almost a year. It was just me, myself and Rebecca, and then maybe one or two other baristas would kind of come back. And I tell you, we learned, it was so hard. It was so hard working with the public and so hard dealing with the craziness that the pandemic naturally brought up in a lot of people. And having to just kind of process through that, some people would come in and be so upset and angry. No matter what you gave them, no matter how nice you were to them, they were just so, you know, just depressed and miserable because this is the only time they got to come out. And when they did come out, they were just fearful and had a lot of anxiety. And we learned so much because of the pain of having to just do that job, which is a difficult job, doing it on our own day after day. And I'll tell you a couple of things that came out of that. The first thing was we have such a deep love and respect for the people who work for us now because we know how hard the job is. And my attitude when we were just paying them and they were doing the job was vastly different before I actually did that job over and over again, day in and day out, because it wasn't just about keeping the shop open and keeping the business running. It almost didn't matter because the government was kind of stepping in and helping out anyway, but just doing it almost as a public service. So I gained a deep respect for the people who worked for us and almost a deep love because I appreciate them so much in a way that I couldn't have ever fathomed, but also a deep respect and love for having to deal with the most minuscule, idiotic, nuanced problems that normally I would just have nothing to do with. I'm like, you guys sort that out, you know? Unless the customer's really complaining, I really had nothing to do with dealing with difficult, irate customers. But now I was doing it every day. And my wife was really the one out front. And she's so amazing, practicing patient acceptance and just learning. We learned more. And we actually look back at that year with so much gratitude because we learned more. Because it wasn't just doing the coffee shop. We also had to run around the business, plus the meditation center and all the chaos that was kind of involved in all of those juggling, all those different difficulties and problematic situations that kept arising. But also the deep appreciation of just gaining, I wouldn't say realization of patient acceptance, but gaining a day by day, just you're thrown into the middle of these situations and there's no escape except patient acceptance. Like there's no escape. So either I learn to practice this patient acceptance or I'm going to be just in the worst situation imaginable. But overall, I look at that as like, what profound, amazing opportunity to really train my mind. And I look back at that time as probably one of the most amazing retreats of my life because there was no escape.
It's amazing that when you think about it, because like in that setting, which, you know, for anyone, even someone who's trained in this for many years like yourself, that would be profoundly challenging on a daily basis. But your prioritization in that particular setting seems very, very intentional around actually the way I'm working with this is important to me. Of course, everything else is important. We're not in any way dismissing that running the business effectively, treating the customers and all stakeholders in the appropriate way is also true as well. However, when we start to prioritize where I'm working from, so like you say, just allowing yourself to appreciate those people who've worked for you for those years prior to that situation, just giving yourself pause to appreciate, actually, this is a tough job. I can't do it, but they seem to be able to do it. Just appreciating others helps us feel this deeper sense of warmth, affection, and connection with others. You can literally just sit as somebody who's running a business or somebody who's working as a boss of in a company or something, just appreciate all the people around you instead of constantly judging them for not doing what they're supposed to be doing, can totally transform your experience of your day. We all want to feel a deeper sense of connection with people. We'd all rather feel love as opposed to anger and frustration. And in the context of the way you're having to work with that situation, it's just simply the situation that's reminding you, actually, these people are amazing. And in that, you're in this tough situation having to work with that post-COVID and stuff and still being able to be at peace with it. In fact, increasing your sense of connection and love for those people to whatever degree that's functioning at that time. But what I also love that you're explaining there is it's like you're using all of these situations that previously you would hand off to somebody else. Hey, I'm the business owner here. I don't need to be dealing with all of this. You're taking them on board, prioritizing that. Actually, if I accept this today, I'm at peace with this today. But the success isn't the money you made on that day or the growth of your business in that period. It's actually, I'm really feeling like I'm feeling a deeper sense of connection with people. I'm feeling more at peace with difficult situations. Through all of these difficult people and challenges that they come in with, I'm actually becoming more resilient. They're my kind teachers, actually.
100%. And I'll be honest, when the time came, when the employees came back, I was very grateful. And I never willingly just jumped behind the bar for the heck of it because it was really hard. But I actually learned this from my teacher, Geshe Kelsang Yato, who's, you know, a world-renowned meditation master and author. He's always kind of like the lowliest of all, as far as like how he considers himself, always a servant to others. And whenever we would do our events, anytime we'd have, you know, hundreds of people come to help pitch in and run the events. I'd always be there loading in, loading out, setting up the booth. Like, I would be there. And I always tell them, like, whatever you guys think you're doing, because we give little speeches throughout the weekend or whatever, whatever you guys think you're doing, I promise you, I've either done the job or I will do it this weekend. And there's nothing that you have done or will do that I haven't done myself. And I love doing it because I love these events and I love supporting all of you. And this is really all about you, because without you being here to help facilitate this, we won't even have an event. We can't do this on our own, my wife and I. There's no way. And I remember how much more enjoyable it is, instead of just like pointing the finger and directing people and trying to figure out how you go over here, like just being in the thick of things and working kind of like, they call it like management by action. Like you're in the thick of the activity, cherishing everybody and trying to make even the most mundane health event fun, interesting, but also meaningful, and trying to find that meaning. And I always used to say, like, oh, listen, this isn't just about selling a bunch of health products or trying to like get people on the stream to purchase our stream. It's about helping people, you know, and trying to give them information that they need or they want in a way that's fun and entertaining. Like, we're trying to cherish people through this event. And that was always our attitude. And I think it did kind of trickle down from us to the staff, to all the participants. And I think it helped really grow our company en masse, because people realize it's a great time to come to the events. Now, we don't do them anymore because they were just so exhausting and, you know, just, they were just so difficult to put on. It's a year of time, you know. Much rather do meditation events now and promote those.
But it's like almost you learn through that, don't you? Like say like your motivation to put on a meditation event now is essentially the same kind of orientation you had when you're putting on those events. And I think it's really important for people to really reflect on that. Anyone listening to the podcast today, it's not what you do in life that makes life feel really meaningful, purposeful, successful. It's really where you're doing it from. Like you say, that kind of humility to say, hey guys, you know, I've done all of these jobs, I'm no better than you, we're all here to work together. But not only does it give you quite a lot of peace of mind when you just come from that mind of cherishing love, where you're thinking, you know, you're important, all of you here today that are helping me are just as important as I am. Your happiness matters just as much to me as my own happiness matters, and as these clients who are listening to this or engaging with this matters. That's so important. Because they talk about, you know, in business, stakeholder management, but stakeholder management, sometimes it just hones in on the clients, forgets the employees. But actually, if we have this mind of cherishing love, all stakeholders are equally deserving of respect, equally deserving of compassion, equally deserving of attention. And actually, if you're living from that place in your heart, regardless how your business is going, you will feel it's been a successful day. But what I love about your particular story there is it's like you're using that situation for you. I'm sure it was physically exhausting, and we're all getting older. But at the same time, it's really energizing around your wish to, your sense of meaning and purpose to continue on from the same place in your heart. And now, as you say, you put on meditation events as well, and you run a meditation center. But essentially the same orientation, it's just for you, there's a deeper sense of meaning and purpose growing. And let's be clear, you're still running all these businesses as well. You're still running a very busy life. You still have a daughter and a wife and many different things. But all of those then come in within that context of this growing sense of love, this growing sense of compassion, and the dynamic energy that generates in our life. And so in a sense, when you create a culture anywhere, I think it's really important that it's based on cherishing love, because if you're doing that, there's a chance, at least a chance, you'll create a culture of that. If you're not doing that, and in your case, you're the business owner, well, a lot of people are looking to you, not everyone, but a lot of people are looking to you to show some level of example. Now, I know for business owners who are struggling with the, you know, getting the paychecks out and so forth, that's not easy, but that's why we go back to what we were talking about earlier on. You've got to prioritize your own mental, emotional and spiritual well-being. You've got to prioritize your own inner well-being, because success for you will never feel like success unless that's in balance and you're really paying attention to that. But then, as you say, from there, you can start to create a culture of that. I think there's a lot of Dharma in just really looking at that very practically. Yeah.
And there's no end. There's no end to the job. There's no end to whatever you have to do. It can keep going on without you or with you. And eventually you have to reach a point in your life and in your career where you're starting to take time away from that job. So you asked me before I got here, oh, you know, how's your business doing right now? And I'm like, well, I'm actually here really on retreat. And I'm really trying to forget about all of that for the weeks I'm here, because it's important to forget about the problems we normally see, because those problems we normally see are always going to be there until we decide I don't want to see them anymore, either the way they're appearing in my mind, or I'm just going to ignore them for a little while. And I try to do that even during my day-to-day meditation practice. I literally need to forget everything that it is that I'm working on and thinking about and consumed with, and a problem that, like, I have to forget it, because that has nothing to do with the practice I'm engaging in. And actually, it's going to deter a lot, because there's literally never going to be an end to the problems that I can think about, ever. And if I don't make that determination in my mind, like, I'm going to stop thinking about the problem at all for this half an hour or 20 minutes, I mean, your problem's going to survive the 20 minutes you don't think about it. And even the few weeks that I'm away, those problems are going to either solve themselves or still continue on whether I'm there or not, because that's the nature of samsara problems in the world. They just show up whether we want them to or not. And so it's really important to have that discipline. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, because sometimes I'll be in a meditation halfway through it and realize I haven't even heard the meditation because I'm still thinking about something, some difficulty I'm trying to work out. And I'm like, oh, I gotta let go of this. This is not healthy, not helpful.
It's such an important part, isn't it, of like your life, obviously, and anyone who's kind of struggling with the busyness of life and so forth, is to really, really bed in a daily meditation practice. Now, for people listening on the podcast who've got a really busy life, that is going to be way, way down the priority scale. But everything we're looking at today, everything we were just talking about, the culture you set up within the place that you work, or the culture you encourage, even if it isn't your business, you can encourage that culture anywhere. It really comes down to you giving time and space to that. And one of the things that's been on my mind recently quite a lot is I hear people talking about they're really struggling with their mental and emotional well-being and resilience, and they're struggling with that sense of meaning and purpose that we were looking at earlier on. And my kind of reflections on that, well, not necessarily my reflections, but within Buddha's teachings, what I've kind of really explored within that, it's really because exactly that. Your life's totally out of balance. You're focused largely, which most people are these days, in fairness, because they don't really know there's another way to deal with it. We're mostly focused out on the material developments of our life, the external aspects of our life, our physical well-being, our nutrition, our sleep. It's just such a priority in so many people's lives these days. And we think that's health and well-being. It's an aspect of it, but it's not all of it. And then we're focused on our career and our family and giving lots of time and attention and energy to that. And then we're focusing on our businesses and how we get that moving. All of that energy going out, I'm not saying you shouldn't give attention to those things, but because of that, there's very, very little for most people energy going in to work with our mental, emotional, and particularly our spiritual well-being, meaning our inner well-being. When we start to get this healthy balance between the two, because we can't abandon the external developments of our life. As you say, you still have a business, you still have a career, you still have a family, you still have all of those things to pay attention to, but you're going to be able to give a lot more attention to those. You're going to have a lot more space in your mind to deal with the challenges of those if you give attention to this inner well-being. And if you're not, again, we go back to that sense of meaning. Your sense of meaning will begin to diminish because you're not finding what you really want by excessively focusing on the externals. What you're finding is ever reducing peace and happiness and ever increasing stress, anxiety, and so forth. So what I love about that, as you say, is like taking the time, even in a very, very busy like you have, to actually sit down and turn in and say, you know what, for now, those problems, I'm going to park them. As you say, they'll be there in 20 minutes, although I would say they won't look the same in 20 minutes, but they're there and I'll deal with them later. But let me deal with them from a place of balance where I feel healthy, I feel happy, I feel resilient, even though they're no doubt going to still be challenging.
And I think you just said it really well, the not having space in our mind. And I think a lot of anxiety, I think a lot of depression is we're so inundated with busyness and activity and distractions that we don't take any time. It's like a pressure cooker. Eventually, if you don't let the pressure off, it's going to explode. But how much time does it really take to reduce the pressure? Like seconds, just shh. And the pressure that normally would have led to an explosion has now been completely reduced. Everybody has 10 minutes in their day, everybody, to watch their favorite Netflix show or YouTube short or whatever. And if you're meditating every day for 10 minutes, guess what? You have a meditation practice. Even 5 minutes, if you do it every day, you have a practice. And if you're doing it every day, I guarantee you're not going to be satisfied with just the 5 minutes. You're going to want to do it a little bit longer. But not having space on the mind, I think we're not really teaching our children this. We're not really teaching anybody this. Space gives clarity in the mind, and we need wisdom to make good decisions. But what's wisdom? It's seeing clearly what is around us. And we can't see anything if our mind is so filled up with all of this nonsense, all of this stress and problems. And really, the problems cause the stress, they create the nonsense, and our minds fill with it. And sometimes they say, you know, when you're going for a walk someplace and looking out over a vast expanse, your mind feels calm and peaceful and relaxed. Well, I think that, and I think Knott Morton gave this analogy a long time ago, that that's our mind being mirrored back to ourselves. Like, we love open spaces because we're seeing the potential of how much space is in our mind and how much, when you have space in your mind, problems have a lot further to land and they don't hit us as hard. If your mind's filled up, every little thing that hits you is going to hurt. When you kind of just give you that space to kind of reflect and just like, and it doesn't take that long. It's really, it's a mindset trying to maintain that space. I think Rebecca was explaining, like, at our shop, we have a lot of professional athletes that, you know, some of them are Super Bowl winners. And I'm always fascinated. And in fact, this giant guy came into our shop before I came here, huge guy who's a former Super Bowl winner. And I said, is the secret to you being a successful linebacker, and I say football, I mean American football, being just stronger and bigger than everybody else? And he's like, no, it has nothing to do with it. In fact, some of the people that I'm most afraid of are half my size. And I said, well, how's that? And he said, because my main job isn't to be big and strong. I have to be big and strong. We have to be strong and fast. But I need to be aware a half second ahead of everybody else what's happening in the game. So I have to be present in a way, and I have to have a mindfulness at work throughout the whole game, whereas I'm seeing everything. My mind's not filled with everything. I'm observing it from a position. He actually used this description, a position of space between me and the game, and I can see everything like a person watching a movie. I'm watching it all play out. And if I'm not in that space and I get overwhelmed, or if I get stressed, or if I'm hearing the crowd and it's kind of riling me up because they're rooting against me, I know I'm going to make a mistake. But if I can stay in that space, focusing on my breath, being aware of everything going on, I know I'm going to have a really successful game. Even if we lose, I know I'm going to have a really successful game. And I know from personal experience, having space in my mind throughout the day, if I don't have it, I'm just going to be exhausted by the time the day ends. I'm going to just need a nap and be like a zombie. Because that's how we rest. We rest by giving our mind and our distractions time to kind of just, you know, settle down a little bit. We think it's a luxury. It is 100% necessity in today's day and age, in my opinion.
I think it's so true. And I think everyone thinks meditation is this thing that you sit down and you close your eyes and you've got your perfectly clean oak floor and you're in your white linen and you're just doing your meditation. Nobody's bothering you. Yeah, that's part of meditation, a meditator's way of life. It's what we call the meditation session. And then there's what we call the meditation break, which is not a break from meditation, it's just the rest of your life. And what I loved by the way you were explaining that earlier on is you were just immediately referencing it within the context of everybody's busy life. You can do that now. You don't need to be sitting on a meditation cushion to love your family. You don't need to be sitting on a meditation cushion to accept a difficult customer or a difficult client. You can just do that in everyday life. And I think that's really important for people to understand. They work hand in hand. I heard somebody saying, it's like, you know, you have your sitting meditation and your daily life meditation. So there's no break. So why would there be a break? Right. Because all we want is to be at peace and happy. Why would you just get off your meditation cushion and feel miserable for the rest of the day? No, I can use every situation. Now you've got a meditator's way of life, but you've also got a really busy life. But that's what now starts to feel like a meaningful, purposeful, and as you know better than me, successful life.
Yeah, and I think I expressed to you, like, I obviously love my wife dearly, been married many, many years. But, you know, one of the main reasons I'm with her is I know married to her, I don't get much wiggle room. Like, no matter what, I'm going away every year to do a festival, to engage in retreat. And throughout the year, we're engaging in so many different practices and retreats. And she kind of, you know, helps me along. I kind of help her along. And, you know, this is part of our life together. And I love the fact that my life is built in where I don't really have an escape pod where I can just like go to a bar and drink beer to kind of escape my problems. And I honestly think the pressure is so great nowadays for so many people that the only kind of refuge they have now is taking some form of a drug or alcohol. And believe me, I understand that. I understand that path because you do numb yourself to those problems. The problem is those problems grow in that numbing. You're not actually solving any problems because really the real problem is we have a mental resistance that we should even have problems, which comes down back to what I was originally saying. We all have this number in our head. If we just had that number, a certain amount of dollars that could solve all these external problems, we'd be happy. It's never worked out like that. And I know many people who are extremely wealthy and you'd be shocked the kind of problems they have. And mostly it's relationship problems, because when you have a lot of external merit ripen and a lot of wealth, again, you could throw money at conventional things like plumbing breaking or a car breaking down or your house flooding. But when it comes to human problems with other people, it's very difficult to solve those problems in that way. And most of the people that come to our meditation center, interestingly enough, they come because they are suffering from some kind of a divorce or breakup or some disagreement with their partner, and they just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to deal with this. And there's literally no escape. I can escape from all my other problems. I have enough money to go on vacation, but because I got to bring my partner, there's literally no escape from this particular problem. What do I do? And that's when the beauty of Dharma starts to, you know, kind of bless their minds in a way that they can kind of realize that they're, not only can I solve this problem, I can solve all my problems, all the pain that I have. And I didn't realize that what the things that I thought were problems out here really are not problems. I have more pressure now with the businesses I run at this moment than I've ever had in my life. But personally, I have less anxiety and mental strain and pressure because of those than I've ever had. In fact, I had way more mental pain when I was in my 20s with nothing, like nothing going on. Like I was always frustrated and depressed and discontented and just never happy ever. And it's kind of weird because I have more problems than ever, but they're not really affecting me like the little problems I had in my 20s and early 30s were, if that makes sense.
Totally. And I'm just listening to you there and I'm thinking exactly that. As you were saying that, I was thinking, I wonder what Len today, we won't say the age, but Len today would say to 20-year-old Len, because, you know, there's this whole kind of talk nowadays of hustle culture and get out there and hustle and make your life successful and build your wealth and all of that. And we're not saying that people shouldn't have ambitions and careers. It's just, again, where you're driving that career from. If you're always driving it from this feeling of lack and separation from peace of mind and happiness, and if you're driving it from that I'm never enough, life is never enough, then you're never actually going to feel it. You're going to be hustling till the day you die and beyond from a Buddhist point of view. But I think what's important, as you're expressing really well today, is this idea you've now found a place in your heart where you're living your life from. But again, it doesn't mean you're any less busy. In fact, you're probably more busy now than you've ever been.
100%.
But Len, looking back now to 20-year-old Len, because there are plenty of people on the podcast listening today, or they're in their, you know, late teens, 20s.
I know exactly what I would say. Exactly. I would say study deeply the law of karma. Understand it to the depths of your bones. Like really deeply get it. Because karma is very simple, actually. It just means action. Cause and effect. We all believe in cause and effect. Every scientific experiment, you start with the cause and with the effect. Oh, the success. We gauge the success of the experiment, whether it was the cause and effect we were looking for. But from a Dharma point of view, the karma we're experiencing isn't necessarily from, it's a hidden object. So it's not that easy for us to kind of understand karma in our life. And so I would say, understand karma deeply, and then really discover what you want. You want to be happy. Well, discover the karma causes for happiness and start working on that karma. So I wanted to be happy, and I was doing the exact opposite of creating happiness. I wanted to be successful, but what was I really doing? What's the karma for success? It's not that obvious when we first hear it. And then we think about it deeply and goes, that actually makes a lot of sense. Is the karma for success reading Get Rich Quick books? Or is it getting an MBA at a famous university? Well, I know some MBAs who can't rub two nickels together. They can't even keep a job. They have actually a couple. They have an MBA and they have other degrees. And it's very, very confounding to people like that who are really smart and really capable and really have gotten the degrees and actually studied all the success books, and they can't make it work. Why? Well, you need to study karma, because that's not the karmic cause for wealth, success, and resources. It's giving. And when we hear that, it's like, oh. And if I understood that at a younger age, I would have been a little bit more generous. And it's not just giving. And I would say, well, I didn't have anything to give away. I had no money back then. Well, give of your love. Give of your attention to others. Fearlessness. Help others. Help protect others. And so I think not understanding karma, I was doing a lot of busy work. I was a really hard worker. I worked all the time and didn't produce a single outcome that I wanted or planned on. You know what I mean? And so I think for younger people especially to really deeply understand karma and look at kind of the tendencies they have now and try to work with what they have and try to purify the things that aren't so great and try to build on the ones that really are great, and to really have patience with the fact that we are living out karmic effects that were created so much longer than we can even remember. And this life is so short. And I think if I had spent some time studying that, it maybe could have taken me into a better direction. I don't know if that helps.
It helps hugely. I mean, I think that's the thing, is people do feel disempowered and they do feel helpless and hopeless at times. But when we, and you know, in this podcast, we will explore more in depth the law of karma. But as you say, in a very simple way, where you live from determines how you experience today. So if you live from a peaceful mind and a good heart of love, compassion and wisdom, it's definitely going to affect how you experience today. It's going to ripen the kind of karma that gives rise to peace and happiness, because what ripens a peaceful, positive mind and a karma to give rise to happiness and give rise to good conditions is a peaceful, positive mind. But also the other aspect, as you say, you're beginning to now, if you're feeling like, you know, I don't know what the future is, I don't know what my future is going to be. Well, if you live from that peaceful mind and good heart today, and as you say, you have that generosity of heart and you're giving to people you love, and eventually from that loving heart, you just feel, I'm giving to people in general, you're creating incredible, powerful karma for peace and happiness in the future and good conditions to support you progressing in this spiritual training, to progress in that spiritual development, but also the conditions to be able to help others who you now love more and more as you develop that love and compassion. So I think it's lovely to explain that at the end of this conversation, that we started this with, you know, you starting off as a young person, like really driven by that success and going through this whole journey you've now been on in your life and getting to this point where actually you've finally, through your own journey and your own discovery with these trainings, it's actually, it's where I'm living from. And the success that I'm looking for, the success that I'm grasping at when I'm younger, will come naturally in the sense that we feel there's a sense of meaning and purpose to our life. Even if you don't have lots of wealth on the outside, you still have this inner wealth that will more than suffice over time. But as you say, that shouldn't remove us from living a dynamic life and doing things in the world, especially if that's coming from a deeper love and a compassion. So I think there's so much in that that everyone can take away from today. And there's so much more we could go through.
Could I just change my last response briefly?
Sure,
If I were to say something to my old self, I think I definitely would advise myself not to be so selfish and self-centered in all the things that I want to accomplish in my life, and really think about how to help others in reaching their goals and really deeply wish others to be successful and wish others happiness, and then work hard to help them succeed. Because I think I've noticed also presently in my life, the more I can help others be successful and happy, the happier I am. And the more I try to like be successful and happy, the less happy I am. So I think if, and I don't know if myself at 20 years old would absorb that thought, but I would say it.
Well, Len, thank you so much for today. There's so much in that conversation for everyone. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule, by the way. But it's great that you've been able to share all of that and all of your experience and insight from that. So I really hope everyone tuning in today has really taken something from that. Thanks so much, Len.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here. Thank you. Thanks so much, Adam.
Hey, everyone, just a quick one. We'd love to get these podcasts to more and more people over time so that many people can benefit from these conversations. So to help us get there eventually, and also if you think it might be helpful to somebody today, maybe you'd like or share this episode. Also, to help us grow this channel over time, please feel free to subscribe.